Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today, broadcasting live and video streaming from our studios in New York City. Today, we're going to talk about compounds in celery that can destroy 86% of lung cancer cells, how kidney stones can be dealt with natural remedies, and what really causes them. How being overweight can trigger autoimmune disease. How meditation can collapse quantum systems at a distance. What does that mean? Also, a study of olive leaf extract. It's as effective as typical diabetic drugs. And omega-3 fatty acids can help children with ADD and much more on health and healing. Then we're going to look at the double standards on bank crimes, five toxic chemicals and products you use every day. Scientists confirm that last year and this year, the hottest year, meaning a 12-month period, in recorded human history. We're going to also take a look at Big Pharma and crony capitalism are out of control by Ralph Nader. And we'll have some other inputs, including a very candid discussion that I filmed of a person for my Poverty Inc. documentary. I thought you would like to see how do we really deal with foreign issues when it comes to a country and a government that doesn't want to bend to our will. Mr. Perkins was the man who went in to make the deals. And it was either silver or lead. And you have a chance to hear this. Also, how is it that we are sold so many of our food products, even when they're very bad for us? Well, a food company and one of its little groups of showing how you sell the public on something, even when it's bad, filmed it. We'll show you what goes on behind those walls. We have a lot to talk about. Let's begin. I'm a big advocate of celery juice. I believe it's one of the most important juices we can take on a daily basis. Of course, green apple and cucumber can go with it, then any number of alternatives. But it's as great as a natural diuretic. Who knew, however, that it would help the body kill lung cancer cells? Natural Society did an investigation, and what they found was that researchers in China had been testing the use of celery 2 to 3 times a week, 2 medium stalks of celery, and reducing the risk of getting lung cancer by amazing 60%. Now, it's still not definitive through the scientific research. However, if the what is called apigenin, A-P-I, genin, G-E-N-I-N, alone, that's the chemical in celery, does the work of killing cancer cells, or maybe it's the cooperation of other compounds in celery. In any case, here's what they say. This is from the scientific journal. Quote, apigenin widely inhibits cell proliferation of various lung cancer cell lines in a dose-dependent manner, and the combination treatment of apigenin and anti-tumor drugs is very effective in human lung cancer cells, and the pathway may contribute to the mechanism. Now, another study abstract focusing on the broader impact of fruits and vegetable intakes on cancer concluded, quote, in particular, high intake of Chinese cabbage, chives, carrots, and celery are inversely associated with lung cancer. the vegetables had a 600% elevated impact and more than a fourfold, that's 400% elevated for smokers, meaning if you smoked and you took in the vegetables I just mentioned, you would have had a better chance of surviving. Conclusion. In agreement with previous studies, quote, we found an inverse relationship between vegetable and fruit intake and lung cancer risk in both strata and current and never smokers, end quote. Furthermore, women who eat plenty of celery in their diets are more likely to reduce the risk of developing breast cancer by 19%, ovarian cancer by 20%. A study of apigenin celery worked even on deadly fast-growing breast tumors through inhibiting cell growth and suppressing the expression of a gene that is known to be associated with cancer growth. Furthermore, blood vessels, which are known to fuel cancer cells, were also found to shrink and receive restricted nutrient flow to the tumor, hence starving the ability of your cancer to proliferate. And one way that apigenin likely works is by reducing the possibility of cancerous growth by decreasing the vascular endothelium, preventing glucose uptake, minimizing the cycle of cancer cells forming in the pancreas. So, what is the takeaway message? Many foods have a number of health benefits, but there are those foods that we consume that are really superstars when it comes to disease fighting, and celery is simply one of them. It has extremely beneficial effects at killing ovarian, pancreatic, prostate, breast, liver, and lung cancer cells. In fact, in a recent study, celery killed up to 86% of cancer cells in the lungs in vitro. So, there you have it, something brand new. We know that celery would help improve digestion. For people who have gastric distress, it's great. Bloating, it's good. Inflammation in your intestines and colon, it's terrific. It reduces inflammation in your joints. It lowers your blood pressure. But we didn't know until now that it had all this power to kill cancer. So, for all of you who've been using this terrific. In fact, last evening, we had our next-to-last meeting. Next week will be the final meeting of our three-month health support group. And I asked them to come in voluntarily and just give a testimonial. You'll hear those testimonials tomorrow. And I'll be doing an original program tomorrow. And at least 20 minutes of it deals with people just saying what happened when they made simple lifestyle changes. But you're talking about one person who dropped 400 points on their blood sugar. Now, to give you an idea, to have a blood sugar at 500, that puts you into a coma. That kills you. Now it's 95. And people who dropped 35 pounds and three people are no longer clinically or technically diabetic. One of them been diabetic for 21 years. All kinds of improvements. So that is good. And they're all drinking celery juice in combination with other juices. Now, a big problem in our society are kidney stones. We shouldn't have kidney stones, but we do. About 12% of men and 7% of women have to deal with kidney stones. That's a lot of people. And most of the time, it reoccurs. 80% they have reoccurrence. Why? Because we have a highly acidic diet. We are nutrient deficient. We're eating processed foods, table salt, tap water, and that leads to kidney stones. Coffee, kidney stones. And by the way, one reason women develop fibrocystic breasts and uterine fibroids, coffee. It's the number one thing I take off every woman's list of things that they do that contribute to fibrocystic breasts. And you can reabsorb fibrocystic tissue. It's not difficult. You can't do it without giving up the coffee, though, and sodas. So what would I do to help someone who has kidney stones using a natural, non-toxic lifestyle modification? Top my list, I would put, get rid of all meat, coffee, processed sugars, and then magnesium citrate and the B complex, an extra B6, generally 50 milligrams. And I would give them lemon juice sweetened with stevia, because with kidney stones, I'm suggesting lemon juice about 3 to 4 times a day. In fact, Harvard researchers found that 180 milligrams of magnesium and 10 milligrams of B6 taken daily can actually prevent 92% of kidney stones. I'm way above 180 milligrams. I'm starting at 700 milligrams of magnesium citrate and 50 milligrams of B6. So that's important. Other studies show huge reductions with magnesium alone at 500 milligrams in kidney stones. But it's eating fresh, raw, organic produce. That's the foundation upon which you prevent this. Get rid of the fried foods, table salt. If you want some Himalayan sea salt, the pink salt, a little bit, that's fine. Get rid of all processed flours. Drink lots of fresh, filtered, or spring, or clean water. And then get rid of the coffee, switch to herbal teas. Green tea is good, and you shouldn't have any problems. Cranberry juice is also very good, and that helps your bladder as well. And if you want some herbs, well, the best herbs that I suggest are nettle leaf. That's very good for your bladder and keeps crystals from forming into stones. Also, gravel root. Gravel root provides a defense against kidney stones and keeps your urine flowing. And it keeps your body alkaline, by the way, especially if you've had meat and coffee and your body's highly acidic. Marshmallow, MARSHMALLOW, root, that soothes the cell membranes. Horsetail herb, that's terrific too. One of the best single herbs there is for your urinary tract and inflammation. Yuva, ursi, U-V-A, U-R-S-I. It comes in leaves, and you take that or a tincture, and that detoxifies your bladder and keeps your urine from being acidic. Corn silk reduces reoccurring kidney stones, and goldenrod flowers, wonderful flowers, they fight urinary tract infections. So, simple things we can do. Also, I've said it many times, I want to emphasize it again. You cannot be overweight and be healthy. Now, you may have okay heart, blood pressure, and pulse rate, but it's not at that level you're taking a beating. You're taking a beating by inflammation. And the latest reason why you should not be overweight is shown in a study from Tel Aviv University. And here's what it says. Quote from Tel Aviv University. Autoimmune diseases like Crohn's disease and multiple sclerosis, in which the immune system attacks its own body rather than predatory invaders, affects up to 20% of the global community. A study published in Autoimmunity Reviews by Professor Schoenfeld points to the major role obesity plays in triggering and prolonging these autoimmune diseases. According to the research, obesity leads to a breakdown of the body's protective self-tolerance, creating the optimal environment for autoimmune diseases, and generates a pro-inflammatory environment likely to worsen the disease progression and hinder its treatment. So, how do you end up with autoimmune disease? Well, you have local infections that are not treated, and a lot of people have local focal infections, meaning in your mouth, in your gums, in your joints, in your intestines. Not even aware of it in most cases. Lack of vitamins, nutrient deficiencies, stress, all of those lead to autoimmune disorders. So keep yourself detoxed. And finally, meditators collapsing quantum systems at a distance. Now, I have a different take on this, and I think you'll find it interesting. Here's what it says. Numerous scientists over many years have studied the role of consciousness and how it can directly influence our physical material world. Vast amounts of research have been published which clearly demonstrate that, yes, consciousness and what we perceive to be our physical material world are directly intertwined. The quantum double slit experiment, and it's a great example of how consciousness can affect our physical material world. A paper published in the peer-reviewed journal Physics Essays explains how this experiment has been used multiple times to explore the role of consciousness in shaping the natural world, the physical reality. And then it goes into the actual experiment. And they used a group of Zen Buddhists in a temple. And they found that when they meditated together, they could actually create what was known as the real-time R, value of R, which are perturbations in wave function. And participants were instructed to direct their attention towards a double-slit device, as in the initial experiment, and it was successful. Anyhow, this has been done several times now. So the idea is not, can our mind project energy out and cause a scientific reality? The answer is yes. We did this over 113 times in experiments in the psi research I was doing for over 31 years at the Institute of Applied Biology. The first, which many of you are aware of, is when we found we could cure cancer in laboratory rats with the same six individuals out of 50 who claimed they could do it. Six were able to do it six times each over a two-year period. But then they went on to do all other kind of phenomena where energy alone was responsible for causing sprouts to grow larger, flowers to grow, all kinds of things. We even planted grass. I planted ryegrass in two different rooms and trays, and the room where they were going in and meditating individually and then collectively, the grass grew twice as fast and was richer in chlorophyll. So the phenomena, and I was communicating at that time with Dr. Stanley Krippner and Dr. Douglas Steen and Edward Graff and many other people around the country who were doing similar research, kind of off the grid, because it wasn't accepted. But here is my point, and you got to listen very carefully to understand this. Energy will always have its opposite there. Our universal truths are truths in all matters. Now, what do I mean? Because this is where it can be a little confusion. So, if you can, based upon the laws of similars, so if someone burned their hand and they had oozing blisters, a homeopathic remedy might be, from a classically trained homeopath, it might be poison ivy. Now, you're not actually taking poison ivy, you're taking a very diluted water drop of poison ivy. Why? Because in a healthy person, poison ivy will cause oozing blisters. So if you have it, you want something that would cause it in a healthy person, hence the laws of similars. But you can't have anything have an energy that can compel a physical change in something in a good way without it also working in a negative way. And I believe that this should be an area of enormous research because we now have all of the information that we need. It's just redundant at this point about what happens when, whether it's a mother gorilla or a human mother is nurturing their baby, breastfeeding, kissing it. And you'll see all the primates kissing their babies, holding them up and looking at them, developing eye contact, creating oxytocin, increasing dopamine levels, giving them that feel-good, wonderful feeling of bonding. You can't have a half-truth when it comes to universal reality. The full truth is that you can use that energy either constructively or destructively. What do I mean? I mean now, think of how many times we have been spoken to with disrespect. We've been ordered, demeaned, not just individually, whole races, made to feel somehow we are culpable, vulnerable, because of the color of our skin, or our religious beliefs, or our social standing. The disdain is clear and evident in our current society. We're acting on the dark side of negative energy. So, if you have the capacity to send love and healing energy to a person, you can also send destructive energy to that person. And we've never looked at what does that mean? What does it mean when one whole group of people look at another whole group of people as being undeserving of any respect or sacredness? In fact, they're perceived in an entirety as evil. So if they're able to collectively chant and cause a physical phenomenon to occur, then you also have to accept that they could do the same thing with negativity, i.e. the Holocaust. It's just one of hundreds of examples. But it comes down to the individuals too. What happens when we become preoccupied in being right, needing to win? What happens when our ego, our self-esteem has been ruffled because someone told us a truth that we couldn't handle? So our response to that truth we couldn't handle is to fight, to try to demean. And how do people hurt other people? Saying something nice to them, being thoughtful to them, kind, coming from love? Never. They try to make the person feel bad about themselves. That's an energy that is real. And I'm sure many people listening right now have felt that. I absolutely know, because I've talked with you, that you felt the positive vibrations from the people that love you. But also, if you have been in harmony with someone, they can use that channel of energy, harmonizing energy that they had with you, to send negative energy. So when you feel that sense of energy that is negative, go to a meditative place, a quiet place, and bring all of your energy to the mindfulness of the moment you're in. Forgive the other energy and don't absorb it. That is free will. That's something we can do. You can't do it if you're vulnerable. You absorb the other person's energy. And hence, people more often than not keep us captive, not by love, but by anger and by negative energy. Just a thought I had I wanted to share with you. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to hear from John Perkins about the real way that we conduct our foreign policy and have for decades. The part that is behind the headlines, you never see this, but it's a reality. This is the way our government and all of its presidents and all of its secretaries of state and all of its CIA directors have been dealing with countries for at least 100 years. He was one of them. He is speaking out, telling us the truth. Can we align with this truth? It's for you to determine. Back in a moment. Before we go to John Perkins, just two quick program announcements. We have a big premiere coming up, both in Los Angeles, and for those of you from California listening right now. Our rating show, there are about 33,000 of you out there listening. It'll be December 5th through the 11th. There'll be 35 showings, and Roy of Hollywood and people within the film will be there. It's all about poverty and how we got there and who's behind it and what we can do as solutions to it. And you can go to... we'll give you on our website, GaryNall.com, you can get the information on the theater and just go get tickets and be there. But in New York City, we're doing this as a fundraiser for WBAI, one of our sister stations. And so I always set some tickets aside with every premiere for those who are financially challenged. They're going through a rough time. And here's what we're doing. And you'll still get one copy of the film free when you arrive. But we're going to offer you the seat of your choice for $15 instead of the $30 for those who are financially challenged. And it's based upon a trust concept that people are not going to exploit it. The regular full price is $30, and you get a book worth $25, two copies of the films, the premiere, and I'm there every night. Members of the who are in the film are going to be there also, discussions. But for anyone who otherwise could not afford the 30, we've set aside 20 seats for you in each showing. So give a call right now at 877-627-5065. It's $15 for people who are financially challenged. 877-627-5065. It's just a week away before the premiere, so it's going to be important. It's qualifying for the Academy Awards. Call Poverty Inc. at the Quad Cinema on 13th Street. And from the 5th through the 11th, 35 showings. So that's it. To help you, call 877-627-5065. Also, I mentioned yesterday, and some people were confused by it. I want to just clarify it. I said that I have finished... two new cookbooks, two, and the follow-up to the big popular one in the last year I had. And this one's going super gourmet, but all recipes are easily preparable, and they're vegan and gluten-free, and most are raw. So normally, my daughter Shelley and some of the chefs I have and work in the kitchen take my recipes, and they test them. And this time we're allowing for the next 2 weeks, starting Saturday from 4 o'clock, we're allowing people who will come and try the recipes themselves. There's no class, there's no cooking class. You've got to be able to cook or prepare food. But here's the nice part: you get to take home the whatever dish that you prepare, and you might be able to prepare two or three in that evening. Saturday from 4 on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we're doing this. So if you would like to come and try your hand under the supervision of my daughter, Shelley, who's a master chef, of brand new recipes, do so. And you can call if you're interested at 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. But please remember, here's where people are confused. This is not a cooking class. There's no class. You've got to be able to come. You'll be given some original recipes. Because every single recipe in every book I ever create, I have multiple people try, sometimes into the thousands, and to make sure that that recipe is as good as it can be. So, you have a chance to try some recipes and take the items home with you and enjoy them with you and your family. That starts Saturday at 4 o'clock, and it'll run for 5 days, and we should be able to finish off the recipes. 877-627-5065. And the book will be out in 5 months, 6 months. Now, let's go over and hear some insights from John Perkins. This is a topic that really should be explored, debated, discussed, and it's not.
The precedent for economic hitmen really began back in the early 50s when democratically elected Mossadegh was elected in Iran. He was considered to be the hope for democracy in the Middle East and around the world. He was Time Magazine's Man of the Year. But one of the things that he'd run on and began to implement was the idea that foreign oil companies needed to pay the Iranian people a lot more for the oil that they were taking out of Iran. The Iranian people should benefit from their own oil. Strange policy. We didn't like that, of course. But we were afraid to do what we normally were doing, which was to send in the military. Instead, we sent in one CIA agent, Kermit Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt's relative. And Kermit went in with a few million dollars and was very, very effective and efficient. And in a short amount of time, he managed to get Mossadegh overthrown and brought in the Shah of Iran to replace him, who always was favorable to oil. And it was extremely effective.
Mobs overflow Tehran. Army officers shout that Mossadegh has surrendered and his regime as virtual dictator of Iran is ended. Pictures of the Shah are paraded through the streets as sentiment reverses. The Shah is welcomed home.
So back here in the United States, in Washington, people looked around and said, wow, that was easy and cheap. So this established a whole new way of manipulating countries, of creating empire. The only problem with Roosevelt was that he was a card-carrying CIA agent, and had he been caught, the ramifications could have been pretty serious. So very quickly at that point, the decision was made to use private consultants to channel the money through the World Bank or the IMF or one of the other such agencies, to bring in people like me who worked for private companies, so that if we got caught, there would be no governmental ramifications. When Arbenz became president of Guatemala, the country was very much under the thumbs of United Fruit Company, the big international corporations. And Arbenz ran on this ticket that said, you know, we want to get the land back to the people. And once he took power, he was implementing policies that would do exactly that, give the land rights back to the people. United Fruit didn't like that very much. And so they hired a public relations firm, launched a huge campaign in the United States to convince the United States, the people, the citizens of the United States, and the press of the United States, and the Congress of the United States, that Arbenz was a Soviet puppet, and that if we allowed him to stay in power, the Soviets would have a foothold in this hemisphere. And that, at that point in time, was a huge fear on everybody's mind, the Red Terror, the Communist Terror. And so, to make a long story short, out of this public relations campaign came a commitment on the part of the CIA and the military to take this man out. And in fact, we did. We sent in planes, we sent in soldiers, we sent in jackals, we sent everything in to take him out, and did take him out. And as soon as he was removed from office, the new guy that took over after him basically reinstated everything to the big international corporations, including United Fruit. Ecuador, for many, many years, had been ruled by pro-U.S. dictators, often relatively brutal. Then it was decided that they were going to have a truly democratic election. Jaime Roldós ran for office. And his main goal, he said, as president, would be to make sure that Ecuador's resources were used to help the people. And he won, overwhelming, by more votes than anybody had ever won anything in Ecuador. And he began to implement these policies to make sure that the profits from oil went to help the people. Well, we didn't like that in the United States. I was sent down as one of several economic hitmen to change Roldós, to corrupt him, to bring him around, to let him know, you know, okay, you know, you can get very rich, you and your family, if you play our game, but if you continue to try to keep these policies you've promised, you're going to go. He wouldn't listen. He was assassinated. As soon as the plane crashed, the whole area was cordoned off. The only people allowed in were U.S. military from a nearby base and some of the Ecuadorian military. When an investigation was launched, two of the key witnesses died in car accidents before they had a chance to testify. A lot of very, very strange things that went on around the assassination of Jaime Roldós. I, like most people who've really looked at this case, have absolutely no doubt that it was an assassination. And of course, in my position as an economic hitman, I was always expecting something to happen to Jaime, whether it be a coup or assassination. I wasn't sure, but that he would be taken down because he was not being corrupted. He would not allow himself to be corrupted the way we wanted to corrupt him. Omar Torrijos, president of Panama, was, you know, one of my favorite people. I really, really liked him. He was very charismatic. He was a guy who really wanted to help his country. And when I tried to bribe him or corrupt him, he said, look, John, he called me Juanito. He said, look, Juanito, I don't need the money. What I really need is for my country to be treated fairly. I need for the United States to repay the debts that you owe my people for all the destruction you've done here. I need to be in a position where I can help other Latin American countries win their independence and be free of this terrible presence from the north that you people are exploiting us so badly. I need to have the Panama Canal back in the hands of the Panamanian people. That's what I want. And so, leave me alone. Don't try to bribe me. It was 1981, and in May, Jaime Roldós was assassinated. And Omar was very aware of this. Torrijos got his family together and he said, I'm probably next, but it's okay because I've done what I came here to do. I've renegotiated the canal. The canal will now be in our hands. He just finished negotiating the treaty with Jimmy Carter. In June of that same year, just a couple of months later, he also went down in an airplane crash, which there's no question was executed by CIA-sponsored jackals. Tremendous amount of evidence that one of Torrijos' security guards handed him at the last moment as he was getting on the plane, a tape recorder, a small tape recorder, that contained a bomb. It is interesting to me how this system has continued pretty much the same way for years and years and years, except the economic hitmen have got better and better and better. Then we come up with, very recently, what happened in Venezuela. In 1998, Hugo Chavez gets elected president, following a long line of presidents who had been very corrupt and basically destroyed the economy of the country. And Chavez was elected amidst all that. Chavez stood up to the United States, and he's done it primarily demanding that Venezuelan oil be used to help the Venezuelan people. Well, we didn't like that in the United States. So in 2002, a coup was staged, which is no question in my mind, and most other people's minds, that the CIA was behind that coup. The way that coup was fomented was very reflective of what Kermit Roosevelt had done in Iran, of paying people to go out into the streets to riot, to protest, to say this Chavez is very unpopular. You know, if you can get a few thousand people to do that, in television, and can make it look like it's the whole country, and things start to mushroom. Except in the case of Chavez, he was smart enough, and the people were so strongly behind him that they overcame it, which was a phenomenal moment in the history of Latin America. Iraq actually is a perfect example of the way the whole system works. So we economic hitmen are the first line of defense. We go in and we try to corrupt governments and get them to accept these huge loans, which we then use as leverage to basically own them. If we fail, as I failed in Panama with Omar Torrijos and in Ecuador with Jaime Roldós, men who refused to be corrupted, then the second line of defense is we send in the jackals. And the jackals either overthrow governments or they assassinate. And once that happens and a new government comes in, boy, it's going to toe the line because the new president knows what will happen if he doesn't. In the case of Iraq, both of those things failed. Economic hitmen were not able to get through to Saddam Hussein. We tried very hard. We tried to get him to accept a deal very similar to what the House of Saud had accepted in Saudi Arabia, but he wouldn't accept it. And so the jackals went in to take him out. They couldn't do it. His security was very good. After all, he had one time worked for the CIA. He'd been hired to assassinate a former president of Iraq and failed, but he knew the system. So in 91, we send in the troops and we take out the Iraqi military. So we assume at that point that Saddam Hussein is going to come around. We could have taken him out, of course, at that time, but we didn't want to. He's the kind of strong man we like. He controls his people. We thought he could control the Kurds and keep the Iranians in their border and keep pumping oil for us. And that once we took out his military, now he's going to come around. So the economic hitmen go back in the 90s without success. If they'd had success, he'd still be running the country. We'd be selling him all the fighter jets he wants and everything else he wants. But they couldn't. They didn't have success. The jackals couldn't take him out again. So we sent the military in once again, and this time we did the complete job and took him out, and in the process created for ourselves some very, very lucrative construction deals. We had to reconstruct a country that we'd essentially destroyed, which is a pretty good deal if you own construction companies, big ones. So, you know, Iraq shows the three stages. The economic hitmen fail there, the jackals fail there, and as a final measure, the military goes in.
And just imagine then how corrupt the regime in Iraq is, was, and in Afghanistan, and in every country we do business with. This is a truth that is too searing for the media to cover in any honorable way or the American public to be exposed to. Virtually everything our government does, everything when it comes to foreign policies and regime change, they lie about. We have to stop accepting their lies. Now, from Ralph Nader, a short commentary entitled Big Pharma, Crony Capitalism Out of Control. Two recent news items about the voracious drug industry should call for a supine Congress to arouse itself and initiate investigations about the pay-or-die drug prices that are far too common. The first item, a page one story in the New York Times, was about the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, which 15 years ago invested $150 million in the biotechnology company Vertex Pharmaceuticals to develop a drug for this serious lung disease. Just last week, the foundation reported a return of $3.3 billion from that investment. The drug developed into an enormous profit. But here's the catch. The price is $300,000 a year per patient. Who can afford that price? The second news release came from the drug industry-funded Tufts Center for the Study of Drug Development. The center's Joseph DiMassi asserts that the cost of developing a new prescription drug is $2.5 billion, significantly higher than the previous estimate of $802 million, that the center claimed 2003. The drug industry promoters use this just absolutely insane figure to justify sky-high drug prices for consumers. Unfortunately, the criticism of this inflated number does not receive adequate media attention. Half of the assertion is opportunity costs foregone if the drug company invested its money elsewhere. That cuts his estimate by half to $1.3 billion. This maneuver gives inflation a new meaning. According to economist James Love, founder of Knowledge Ecology International, DiMassi also conveniently ignores government subsidies such as so-called orphan drug tax credits, research grants from the National Institutes of Health, and the government support for the cost of clinical trials to qualify. Mr. Love adds that the drug companies spend, quote, much more on marketing than they do on research and development. And as a result, we end up with drugs that don't cost that much, but they're able then to charge as much as they want. So the next time you hear about a drug costing $300,000 a year, understand that that's not because they spend it in research. That's because that's the payback. When you give money, $5.3 billion in lobbying by 200 companies, they got $5 trillion back in contracts and deals. That's why lobbying is so effective. Also, five toxic chemicals in the products you use every day. So this is good. This is from Sage McHugh of Alternet. So if you see these, just stay away from them. The first is chemical fillers in sunscreens. Yes, many of the sunscreens on the market use either mineral or chemical fillers to block sunlight. And products that use chemical filters usually contain a combination of two or more ingredients that are extremely toxic. So mineral sunscreens generally contain titanium dioxide or zinc oxide. So stay away from the non-natural sunscreens, period. Parabens. They're found in your beauty care products, deodorants, shampoos, lotions, facial cleansers, and parabens are very dangerous. They can lead to breast cancer. So stay away from parabens. Use natural cosmetics. Read the labels. Also, be very careful about fragrances, because anytime you have on the label fragrance, that can be an undisclosed mixture of very toxic chemicals. And some of these chemicals are extremely allergic reacting, can disrupt your endocrine system and damage organs. So what do? Get a fragrance that's a natural fragrance, 100% natural. And then you have triclosan. That's in your antibacterial soaps and deodorants and toothpaste. TRICLOSAN, triclosan. It's an antibacterial agent. Stay away from all antibacterial soaps. Use just regular soap. Remember, it's not what's in the soap that makes the difference. It is how thoroughly you scrub your face, your hands, your body. It is the friction that is creating the power. That's it. It's that simple. Now, let's hear from the Secrets of Food Marketing.
I'm going to give you some of the secrets about how we make you buy what we want you to buy. So as a marketer, when I'm first giving you a product, what's my job? Well, my job is to make you want it, to crave it, to need it, to think that it is the best innovation in food since sliced bread. But how do we do it? Well, I'm going to give you a really big example later that I'm going to break right down for you. But let's just start by looking at a few fun little things. So here we have Shreddies, an old favourite, been around for years, very popular in the UK and Canada. Without changing a single little thing about that product, they remarketed them, rebranded them as brand new diamond-shaped Shreddies. Food marketing genius right there. In the 1950s, there was a very important innovation in food. The instant mix cake, one of my personal favourites. When they were first brought out, all you needed to do was to add a little bit of water. Who's not going to love that? Well, actually, no one loved it. No one bought the bloody things. So they did a bit of research. And what they found was that the main consumer, the target consumer, the housewife, felt that it was cheating. They didn't want to pass off such an easy thing as their own baking to their partners, their husbands, their families, whatever. So what did the producers have to do? They had to make it harder. So now you had to add water and an egg. And sales exploded. But these examples, these are just chicken feed compared to what I really want to talk about tonight, and that is chickens and pigs and cows. So when we think about where chickens, etc., come from, we think about something a bit like that. That's also our instinctive idea. But we all know, if we really think about it, if we think about it deeply, it's probably a little bit more like that. But that's a lot nicer. It's a lot more romantic. So how do we give you this impression? Well, there are three techniques that we use. The third of which is our secret weapon, and I am going to blow it for you tonight, so please stay primed for that. Let's look at technique number one. Everybody believes what's on the label. So let's look at some examples. Some of my favourites, some of the ones I use all the time. I'll use Farm Fresh. I'll use 100% natural. I'll use butcher's choice. But what does that really actually mean? Well, truthfully, it doesn't mean very much. If we see that on the label, we feel a bit more confident. But let's have a look at what a farm really looks like. It probably looks like that. Now, this is a concentrated animal feeding operation. I'm going to run that past you again. It's a concentrated animal feeding operation. That's not going to look great on a label. Hence, we use Farm Fresh. Innovation number two, this is what we use. We focus on progress. Intensive farming was born out of necessity. At the end of the Second World War, resources were extremely tight. Farming had to be, it had to be by necessity, very, very economical. And we've learned from that, and we've built from that, and we're able to now raise more and more animals in smaller and smaller spaces. So we've got extremely good at it. If we looked at a room of about this size, and this were turned into a chicken barn, it's a 100-seat theatre, how many chickens could we probably fit in this room now? I'm going to say about 4,000. It's pretty impressive, isn't it? It'd probably look a little bit like that. Now, the public aren't going to be massively keen on that idea, and it's my job to make them feel a little bit better about it. So how do I do it? Well, a basic principle of marketing. We use the right choice of words, and by using the right choice of words, we can make the conversation, we can focus the conversation the way we want it to. So we'll use an example like this. When you look at that picture, where is your eye drawn? It's drawn right to the middle of the page, massive letters, we've got strive to optimise. What we're looking at in the picture, in reverse, looks a bit like that, but this looks a lot nicer, because we're looking at strive to optimise. It makes us feel that there's progress, we feel good. So the challenge for the marketers is to make the public feel comfortable about what they're seeing. One of the side effects of intensive farming, of having so many animals in such a small space, unfortunately, is obviously disease, because you put so many animals into a small space, they're going to get sick. It is no secret that 50% of all the antibiotics in the world are used on farmed animals. So how do you make the public feel okay with this? How does that happen? My job. How do I do it? I use the language of innovation. So we're going back to our old friends at porkcares.org. And what they do is they say, as farming has become more efficient, veterinarians have incorporated new technologies and methods into practice. This makes us feel good. This is positive. Yeah? This is progress. And when we're then marketing to future consumers, we would perhaps use something like this. This is a colouring book. Pigs and pork. It's absolutely gorgeous. And what we're doing here is we're getting the children to focus on the fact that we're using innovation. So by bringing the pigs out from the muddy fields and into the clean barns, we're taking them away from all that nasty, dirty mud. Techniques alone, they are not going to work. We need a secret weapon, number three. It is actually in this room right now. Secret weapon! It is you! So how do we do it? When you're in the supermarket, you don't want to think about where those products have come from. You don't want to think about how those animals have been reared, how they've been treated. The power of willful ignorance cannot be overstated. This is systemised cruelty on a massive scale, and we only get away with it because everyone is prepared to look the other way.
So you get away with selling products where an animal has been tortured, abused, and killed because of willful ignorance. And that's their secret weapon. Smart. It works. That's also true for electing politicians and from watching bombastic narcissists in the media. Talkback time, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, your opportunity to call in now. By the way, here is the phone number and the address of the theater in Los Angeles. It's the Lamely Theater. It's in Pasadena at 673 Colorado Boulevard. Let me give you the phone number. And it's going to be December 5th through the 11th, 35 showings of Poverty Inc. You can call. And it's just the regular price of a ticket there, 310-478-3836, 310-478-3836. Let's say hello to Luann. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I have an anonymous email. I know you don't like anonymous emails, but this one didn't leave their name, but I thought this was a very interesting email. And the person says, I work in the media, in a very powerful, very successful media outlet. I thought you would find it of interest that every day I download your show and I review all of the articles that you talk about, which seem to have doubled or tripled in the past few months. I find the info that I can find nowhere else. And they said, you are correct. We do self-censor constantly. Not a single article on your site would ever be considered to be discussed in the media outlet I work at. It wouldn't be published. It wouldn't be broadcast. And yet, all of the articles are very, very accurate. And he or she says, I know of two other journalists who also use your site for real information. I also saw the numbers. And the person says, 20 million is a huge number. Keep it up.
Thank you. Well, each day we select anywhere from 100 to 200 articles and photographs and documentaries and videos to show a different perspective than what they're going to find in the rest of the media. And we have tens of millions of people who come visit and share the information, and it's free. Thank you. Red from Long Island. Hi, Red. Your turn.
Yes, hi, it's Brad, not Red. Gary, how are you?
Good.
Gary, we have someone out here, and I'm not going to mention his name because he's not on the call. This is your format to defend himself. But he raises chickens, and I've seen him in action with things. So some of his property borders an elementary school, and he dug a bunch of dirt right next to their property to sell the dirt, not related to raising the birds, but... Then the establishment had to come, the town or whoever, and said, you know, you can't make a big crater next to an elementary school's playground because a child could fall in it. But this is the guy who's raising the birds that you think are being naturally raised, and maybe he is or isn't following what he should be following if you want it done properly. So just because they have a sign up and say, well, we don't use this or this and that, doesn't necessarily mean they are or aren't. Right?
Yes. The point to make is this. There is no humane way to slaughter an animal, whether it's a chicken or fish or a cow or horse or in Thailand and other countries, Philippines, dogs. No, just there's no purpose to doing it. We don't need it. We don't need the nutrition. We can get all the nutrition we need from our plant-based diet. Thanks for bringing that to our attention. I'm looking at the clock, and we're out of time. I want to thank all of you for taking your time to listen, and I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day. John from California. Your turn, John. Is John there?
Did you say the other day or last week that you can't feed avocados to dogs?
You shouldn't be feeding avocados to dogs. Now, there's some things, chocolate you don't feed to dogs, onions don't feed dogs, there are certain foods that are not compatible with a dog. Avocado is one. Thank you. Joe from Virginia. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Gary, long-term listener. Last week you mentioned about buying junk silver, and I would like to do that. Is there any companies that you would recommend?
The ones that you see advertised are fine because they're bonded. The key is don't let them upsell you. They're going to try to sell you on exotic or antique or special shipments from Europe. No, you just want the cheapest pre-1963 dimes and quarters. They'll try to sell you dollars, half dollars, don't, just dimes and quarters. And you want possession. You don't want them. You don't want them holding it. You don't want certificates. Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All the best.
Love your show.
Bye. Back to Luann. Hi, Luann.
Gary, I have one more here. This, you know, you have a listener here from Paris. Her name is Colette, and she says, my friend and I get virtually all the progressive news each day, a lot of different articles. And her question is this, could you explain by what you mean by smart people don't make stupid choices and good people don't make bad choices?
That's one of the urban legends that allows us to feel good about ourselves. And it's part of our lying to ourselves and lying to other people. The only people who are going to make a bad choice are bad people. The only people who are going to make a stupid choice are stupid people. Now, that doesn't mean you can't turn around and make a smart choice or a good choice. But that's how we defend ourselves when we live in this duality of knowing a better way of living, doing, communicating, but acting on lower or more primal or base instinctual reactions. And therefore, we're much like watching a tennis match, back and forth, back and forth. Will today we be smart or will we be stupid? Now, we know what is a smart choice and we know what is a stupid choice. But our compulsions, our addictive nature, our lack of spiritual discipline then means that whatever the impetus is that causes us to react is where we'll go. Now, once we realize we've made a stupid choice and a bad choice, we either blame other people. Almost always people blame circumstances or other people. They don't want to honor the choice they made because, after all, that's a smart man. How could a smart man make such a stupid choice? Well, because he was acting stupid. In that moment, he chose stupid. How could a good person do bad? Well, think of all the priests. They knew what should be. They were certainly fully indoctrinated into spiritual practices, but they acted on lower and evil and vile impulses. So when they thought those thoughts and acted out as predators against children, they were evil. So, and they were stupid, and they were wrong. It doesn't mean that they are perpetually that way or fixed that way. It means that we live between two dynamics, and the duality of these dynamics is what keep most people living in a vortex of non-enlightenment. It is when you free yourself from the conditions of the subconscious and you live in the light of your being that you'll make good choices and learn from them. That's all the time we have. Thank you. Let's say hello to Utrice. Hi, Utrice.
Hi, Gary. Today we continue our discussion on the grand jury's decision in Ferguson and whether it is a harbinger for the ongoing federal probe there and the New York City Eric Garner chokehold case.
Utrice, lead right now.